This is an AMI podcast.
Hey, Dave Brown here. If you enjoy this podcast portion of our show, remember you can watch it live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown, coming to you on AMI TV. I'm Dave Brown. It's Thursday, June the 8th, 2023. Coming up in the second hour of the show, Stephen Scott will give you his thoughts on Apple's newly revealed virtual reality headset. It's called the Vision Pro. And Don Dickinson explains why Gursahib Singh is using YouTube to help new international students avoid the struggles of studying abroad. But the hour begins with the regional news updates. Starting in BC, the all-you-can-eat buffet on British Columbia ferry trips between Vancouver Island and the mainland are no longer on the menu. The buffets were initially put on hold during the pandemic. That is now a permanent policy. Spokeswoman Deborah Marshall explains why.
It took seven crew members per sailing to staff the buffet. It also lost over $1 million annually. And then coupled by the fact, new attitudes about food safety and waste, that's why we came upon the decision to not reopen the buffet in its previous form.
BC Ferries has launched a public feedback survey to seek public opinions about options for dining. Over to the prairies, Saskatoon city officials say significant property tax hikes may be needed to cover a funding shortfall caused by inflation. Over the next 2 years, the city is expected to face funding gaps of nearly $75 million. The city's chief financial officer says Saskatoon could have to raise taxes by 13%. Even that tax hike would still require almost $15.7 million in cuts. Just a reminder, the province gave themselves all kinds of pats on the back for their surplus on their provincial budgets. Interesting. Over to Ontario. Ontario is set to increase the wages of early childhood educators. The $10 a day daycare program could add up to 86,000 spaces for children. Education Minister Stephen Lecce says the province is determining what kind of pay bump will be put in place.
My assurance to the BCs, to the workers, to the sector, is that we're going to go further. And obviously, we've wrapped up the consultation. The feedback is received loud and clear. And I look forward to bringing forth the plan that I believe will materially demonstrate the respect they deserve.
The current wage floor is $19 an hour for early childhood educators. Let's bring in Brock Richardson for a sports chat. Okay, Brock, starting in the world of the NBA Finals, the Denver Nuggets now have a 2-1 series lead over the Miami Heat after what was a very convincing win last night, especially in the second half.
Yes, it was. I would say this is that as I watch games, I write notes as the game goes along. And the first thing I wrote was that Miami really set the pace in the first couple of minutes of the first quarter, and I really thought maybe Miami's gonna make home court part of their what they're gonna do here, and then Denver just really came on really strong. And then the second thing, this one's kind of amusing, the second thing I wrote was that the referees are letting the players underneath the net kind of battle it out a little bit, and then they started to have these ticky-tack fouls where it was like, oh, you met me at the same spot, I met you, and the referees decided to give a foul one way or another. That was my impression of sort of the first half. Jamal Murray, 20 points in the first half for Denver. Really incredible. Nikola Jokic doing what he did, 30, 20, and 10 points for rebounds, assists, and points. This is something that's never been done in the NBA Finals before. And really just a complete performance by Denver, and to me, unless Miami really changes, Denver is really going to start putting their foot on the throat of Miami, I believe, because what we're seeing is, Denver just be too strong and not an easy match for Miami, as we discussed in the beginning portions of the series.
Yeah, I'm not going to get in the habit of writing off the Miami Heat because they've continued to prove you and me wrong throughout the playoffs. So I'm not going to go that far. The series is still young. Nikola Jokic, though, you mentioned the 32 points, 20 rebounds, 10 assists. The first time a player has reached those three scoring plateaus in one game in NBA Finals history. This guy, as a 7-footer, is such a tremendous ball handler and such a great mover of the basketball. But Brock, there's something about him taking the ball at the three-point line, dribbling and moving towards the basket for what appear to be easy layups. It's not elegant, but he plays basketball as if it was a cruise ship or an ocean liner moving through the key. There's really something about this Nikola Jokic where you're like, how are you doing this? You don't look like an athlete.
Well, and the thing I said last night too, that I'll reiterate here now, is he's such a giant killer. Like, the guy goes inside, outside, and Miami will score a three, and then Jokic will come down and say, well, I can do that too. I'll drop a three in the midst of all my assists, all my points. And it's just, he just comes along and he just says, yeah, you guys think you're making a run? Bam, here we go. I'm going to do this. And you're right, it's not the prettiest style of basketball that he plays, but man, he gets the job done, and that's all you can ask for in basketball. And to me, I find that some big men can be so clunky, as I've said before on the program, but he, not so much. He's just kind of like this guy that just kind of goes on about his business inside out. It's just incredible to watch him and the way that he decides to play. I do want to shout out Christian Braun, which I might be saying his name a bit wrong, as the broadcast were like, it might be Brian, it might be Braun, we don't know, whatever. But Christian Braun, 22 years old for the Denver Nuggets, just an unbelievable second half for him and how he chose to play. That's a name that I didn't really see a lot of until yesterday. And it's like, when you're getting that kind of support from a 22-year-old, Denver, man, you guys are just totally complete. But as you mentioned, let's see what Miami decides to do in game four here. They've got another opportunity to tie this thing up, and we'll see what happens. But Brock, yeah, that's sort of the look at the NBA final.
Brock, the sports world remains in Miami as the Stanley Cup final is also in Fort Lauderdale tonight for the Panthers and the Knights. So there are three really good American cities involved in the Stanley Cup and NBA finals. So you've got Denver, you've got Miami, and Las Vegas. If I told you you could watch one game at, let's not say the arenas, because the arenas are too expensive, you and I can't afford that. If you had to watch any of these series or travel to one of these cities to watch the series, which one would you choose?
I was going to pick the Florida Panthers, where they are going to play. The easy answer is
Vegas. Your answer is Miami. Your answer is Miami.
Yeah, it's Miami. Miami is where I would go. I think, you know, if we look at the Stanley Cup final, the easy answer is Vegas. But I think Florida, with all that they've, you know, not been at the Stanley Cup final in a very long time. And I just think their fan base is kind of cool and how they've supported and jumped on the bandwagon. So for me, it would be Miami would be my choice.
Denver has one thing legalized that I really like. Florida has another thing legalized that I really like. Nevada has both of those things legalized that I really like. So you can plop your boy down in Las Vegas to take in a couple weeks of sports. I think that's where I would go. Brock, we'll expand that question a little bit later in the week or next week about where would you go to watch any major sporting event if a city was involved in the finals. But you and I will not have time to do that today, because we have to take a little bit of time to talk about the PGA Tour LIV Golf merger that was announced stunningly on Tuesday. And now with the RBC Canadian Open taking place in Toronto this week, the golf world and all the controversy about this merger, or the words that should be used, the acquisition of the PGA Tour by the Saudi Arabian International Independent Wealth Fund, has really, really ruffled some feathers here. And Toronto appears to be ground zero for the reaction.
Yeah, I'll say this, is that their interesting choice for LIV Golf and PGA Tour coming together was to, quote, unify the game. I don't know that there was much unified when LIV Golf came to be in the first place, because people that were on the PGA side were very much supportive of the PGA side. The people that were on the LIV Golf side were filling their pockets and you know, making that side very good. So to me, we'll see what happens here. I will say that Roy McIlroy made some comments yesterday ahead of the Canadian Open. I still hate LIV Golf. I hope it goes away and expect it to go away. So people are not mincing words about the way that they feel about this on the PGA side. It'll be interesting to see what kind of response we get from Tiger Woods, as he got a boatload of money offered to him initially and he turned it down and said
$800 million offered to Tiger Woods through LIV Golf, through the, I'm going to get this right this time, the Saudi Arabia Sovereign Wealth Fund. Got to make sure I get that right if I'm going to talk about this as a news story. $800 million is what Tiger was offered by LIV Golf in Saudi Arabia to be part of their league.
Yeah, and I didn't quite remember the figure. That's why I didn't come up. So thank you for that. But yeah, it's a lot of money. And for Tiger Woods to turn down, you know, $800 million and stick to where he believes, you know, his career is and was, it'll be interesting to see now what happens with this merger. We don't know a lot of details on the merger, aside from the fact that they are going to merge. But it remains to be seen sort of how these two sides merge together and coexist, because it seems that the PGA side's been on one side and the LIV side's been on the other, and they've been trying to, you know, purge one person over, and sometimes it's worked, sometimes it hasn't, so we'll see what this does. But I really find that their choice of words in unifying the game was an interesting choice, because I don't see much unification going on between the two sides at this point.
So Brock, here's what we do know, and this is one of the reasons why I think the expression that's being reported in the media, merger, is a bit unreasonable. Essentially, what's happened here is it's all going to fall under the branding of the PGA Tour. What's happening is LIV Golf executives are joining the PGA board of directors, including the director of LIV Golf, who's part of the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, who will now be the chairman of the board at the PGA. The PGA still, in theory, is going to retain control of the board in terms of volume, but the chairman of the board will now be the person representing LIV Golf and the person representing the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund. So that's what you do know here, right? You understand these two things are going to be coming together, but really and truly, this was a buyout in the way that the Saudi Wealth Fund and LIV Golf was offering players boatloads of guaranteed money to come over to their league for the last year. What you know now, we don't know the exact figure, but the PGA got the bag. And they basically said, you know what? Why fight you in court? Give us some cash, and here you go. Here's our tour.
Yeah, and sometimes when you're fighting a giant with a lot of money, you ask the question to yourself, as the PGA did, why are we doing this? And to me, I'm okay with this merger. We'll just see how it coexists with players who, as I mentioned, were on both sides. But right now, it's just sort of a shuffling of executives where and bags of money moving, bags of money that I will never see in my time in life. I wish somebody would offer me $800 million to do anything, but yeah, we'll just see how it goes.
Brock Richardson's ethics for sale for 800 mil. Okay, I got it.
Yeah, I don't think I will ever get anywhere close to that, but I would welcome it if LIV Golf wanted me to.
Dangerous game, Brock, when you start offering to sell your soul on national TV. The brands are going to come lining up. Yeah, Brock, you mentioned the player side of this. There were a couple players. You mentioned Rory McIlroy, Colin Morikawa. The PGA sent a lot of their players out, guys who were loyal to the tour, to really go denigrate and make an ethical and moral case against LIV Golf because of some of the ethical concerns raised about the way that Saudi Arabia deals with inclusion and equality in their country. And what a slap in the face to these players. And it's a reminder that oftentimes when capitalist entities tell you to take bullets for them, you absolutely never should. Never take a bullet for management. Make management management take the bullets. That's one of the lessons here. Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa, I'm sure, have their ethical stances, and now those go out the window because they had to take bullets for a corporation above them. Really, really poor form by the PGA.
Yeah, it's tough when your athletes have to take the bullet for you, and I think...
Well, no, it's tough for the athletes. It's like it's not tough for the PGA. The PGA is getting the bag of money here.
Yeah, no, it's tough for the athletes to take the bullet. And I, you know, sometimes you see corporations, you know, take the bag of money, and then their people are left kind of, well, we're the ones that stand in front of the press and now have to, you know, mention what we think. And so I, as you said on the commercial break, it's funny now that the center of the universe, and as you mentioned off the top of this, has been, you know, the Canadian Open, which is the largest event in Canada for golf. But it's interesting now that this has become the center of this sort of controversy and discussion, because when I grew up, the Canadian Open was kind of like, oh yeah, it's that event in Canada. And now because of this LIV Golf situation, that's become sort of a bigger thing in the news world. And people will watch it now because they want to see what everybody has to say through the event and beyond that.
They used to hold it the week after the British Open, and players were like, ah, no thanks. I just played at a major in England or Scotland. I'm good. You guys can have your Canadian Open. So they moved that one on the calendar, much to the delight of organizers. Brock, thank you for this. Have a great day, homie.
You as well. It's all about the money, moving things on the calendar, too. That's the other thing.
Well, it used to be all about the Benjamins. Now it's all about the Mohammed bin Salmans, the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salmans. Okay, before I get in any more trouble, let's go to Alex Smythe for the National Weather Updates.
Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. Starting off in Corner Brook, Newfoundland, it's rain off and on today, and the high is going to be 17 degrees. In Charlottetown, PEI, it's a mix of sun and clouds, and there is a chance of rain as well. Slightly cooler conditions at a high of 16 today. Similar conditions in St. John, New Brunswick, a mix of sun and clouds, chance of rain, and a high of 16. To Quebec City, Quebec, it is cloudy with a chance of rain, and the high is 12 degrees. Here in Toronto, Ontario, it's cloudy with a chance of rain and thunderstorms. There is widespread smoke in the area. The high is 19 degrees, and there is an air quality statement in effect due to the smoke. Over to Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, it's sunny, hazy, and becoming local smoke later in the morning. There's also wind gusts up to 50 kilometers per hour. The high is 19 degrees. In Brandon, Manitoba, there's rain and thunderstorms throughout the day. The high is 26 degrees, feeling like 33 with the humidex. To Regina, Saskatchewan, it's a mix of sun and clouds, and there is a chance of rain and thunderstorms this morning. The high is 29, feeling like 34. To Lethbridge, Alberta, it's a mix of sun and clouds with a chance of rain and thunderstorms as well. The high is 30 degrees. Slightly warmer with a humidex, 31 degrees, it'll feel like. In Red Deer, Alberta, it's sunny, a high of 30 degrees, and there is a heat warning in effect for the area. Up in Whitehorse, Yukon, it is a mix of sun and clouds today, and a high of 21 degrees. Over to Kelowna, BC, it's sunny, becoming a mix of sun and clouds this morning. The high is 34 degrees. In Vancouver, BC, it is mainly sunny, hazy, and the high is 23 degrees by the water. But as you make your way inland, it's going to be a high of 26 degrees, which will feel like 27. And that was your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Thank you very much, Alex. Coming up after the break, Apple has finally revealed their VR headset, the Vision Pro. It feels like it's been decades of speculation on that one. So now that it's out, what do people think? Stephen Scott of Double Tap will share his thoughts. That's Now with Dave Brown. And this is Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Apple finally unveiled their long-awaited virtual reality headset. Apple's Vision Pro, finally out there in the ether for all to hear about and see. Stephen Scott of Double Tap has been talking about Apple's plunge into headsets for a long, long time. So I am so eager to find out what Stephen thinks of this long-awaited headset. Stephen, of course, is in Glasgow, Scotland, and you can find Double Tap daily on AMI Audio at noon Eastern. Hey, good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Dave. You know what? I have to tell you, my audience is more excited about this, at least in the sense of maybe I'll shut up about this eventual headset coming out at long last. Yes, it is finally here. And you know what? I am beyond excited. I have never in my life screamed like a 12-year-old girl at a Justin Bieber concert when they said, when Tim Cook stood up on stage and said, "But one more thing." And I have to say, even Sean Priest was like, "Yay, it's finally here."
Well, I think part of it is that it's nice because I feel like you have been talking about this for years, at least in terms of Apple Glass, right? You've been talking about that to me for a long time. And finally, something comes out in this family of products. So I don't know if you were being a little sarcastic or facetious there, but why are you excited now? Now that it's been revealed, what's your response?
Well, you know what? You're right to be skeptical of my skepticism sometimes. but no, honestly, I am excited about this, and I'll tell you why. Because what I think they've done is they've shown us what is essentially going to be a future product. It's not coming out until early next year. Now, if we go by the Apple Watch, for example, which was released in early 2015, it didn't show up until end of April. So, you know, an early can mean anything, really, depending on a lot of things. And I have some hunches that what we've heard so far will change. For example, price, but I'll get to that later. But I think what they've shown us is not just another VR headset for gaming, or could be used for gaming, because that seems to be the classic approach with virtual reality. This is very much a work product. This is something you could use at home if you work from home, and you can still get that connection with your office and your staff in the office, and they could have that equal experience with you. Even if, for example, you're all working from home, you know, using spatial audio, for example, to be able to hear where people are sitting in a room, you can literally place people around your dining room table and, you know, have a little conference to yourself with your colleagues and, you know, hear where they're coming from and actually look in their direction and talk to them and have that interaction in a much more personal way. Equally, from a leisure perspective, being able to watch movies, being able to enjoy content, you know, in a really interesting and new way, being able to have, you know, a 100-foot wide screen in front of you. For you and I, for example, that would be incredible, right? Having that kind of experience. There are, of course, questions around isolationism that comes with this kind of thing. But, you know, ultimately, this is a device which offers a lot of promise and takes computing away from being that glass slab in your hand and putting it literally in front of your eyes and making it the world around you.
Stephen, you mentioned the price tag, currently reported at $3,500 US. That's a whole lot of cash. What is your expectation in regards to that price tag? Because that is way more expensive than Facebook's product or Meta's product that's on the market.
So I'm giving you something here that you can throw back and use against me in the future, which is I am going to put a prediction out today that there is no chance it will come out at that price. It will be lower than that price. Now, what that price will end up, I think, will probably sit between $2,000 and $3,000 US. And I say that because I think they have wanted to put out, almost in the way that they put out products and concepts, to just see what people feel. I think they're looking at and watching reaction to this price. The rumor is that this product costs $1,500 to make.
Oof.
So a $3,500 price tag is a significant increase on that. And of course, companies want to make profit. But Apple could make a loss on this, or they could at least break even. So coming in at $2,000 is still a healthy profit. Coming in at $3,000 is an even more healthy profit. So I would predict it's going to sit between $2,000 and $3,000 at the end. But either way, this is a premium product. This is costing a lot more than the competitors out there. When you look at the $400-$500 options from Meta, of course, even the Meta Quest Pro, the equivalent in this field at the moment, is $1,500. So you can see how the land lies. Apple do not conform to anything when it comes to what they do. They do their own thing, and the market follows. So, you know, ideally, if this comes out at $2,500, Meta's new Meta Quest Pro will be $2,500 as well. So, you know, where Apple goes, the rest follow usually. But that's just price, of course. We've yet to actually experience it.
Stephen, one of the reasons why people are so eager, at least from the blind and low vision community, in regards to virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality, whatever you want to call it, is because there is the possibility for an accessibility feature or accessibility tools being offered to you. I don't think that was explicitly talked about at Monday's reveal, but in your mind, what's the potential for accessibility features as this product comes to market and matures?
Well, the good news is, although not at the actual keynote itself, the main keynote that everyone was watching, immediately after that was an event called State of the Union, where Apple outlined to their developers, to the people who are creating the applications that will go onto this device, they talked about the tools that would be used by developers and that could be used, and it mentioned accessibility. And in there, they talked about the fact that this is the first time a first-gen product, so the first iteration of a new product, will come out with every single voiceover, zoom, magnification, switch control, pointer control, every accessibility feature you can have in an iPhone, in a Mac today, and of course across watch and TV and all the rest, they will all be in this product from day one. And they showed examples of how that would work. And it's really interesting because the gestures, the ability to use hand gestures to control this, will work with VoiceOver, for example. For those who have physical limitations, who can't physically use the device, they will have head or pointer options they can use. So all of the things that, you know, we use, and you know, culmination of all of those things, I mean, voice input as well, that will be a big part of all of this. So you'll be able to basically input in any way that suits you or a combination of all of them. So accessibility is baked in from day one. It is the first time they've gone this far with a first-gen product, which I think is really interesting. What I think is more interesting than that, and what will really be the sell point for this for a lot of us as blind people, is the applications that go on there. And I think there are going to be a lot of companies that make specialist products for blind people today who are going to be thinking, maybe we should move out of the hardware game and into the app game very quickly. And that would be the smart move for these companies. I'm looking at eSight, I'm looking at Orcam, I'm looking at Envision, I'm looking at all these companies who are building hardware solutions. They may want to rethink that going forward.
Oh, shots fired by Stephen Scott, putting these people on blast and putting them on alert. Stephen Scott Consulting is open to the public if they want to get some of that coin, because Stephen wants to afford one of these headsets. Okay, Stephen, circling back to where this all started, you've been excited about the release of something in this family of products for a long time from Apple. Did it meet your expectations?
Oh, beyond. Absolutely beyond. And I think because of the fact that, even though we haven't tried it yet, even though we haven't had hands-on, we're just going by the what we know is in there in terms of hardware, and it's very little we know at the moment other than the processor running the latest M2 Apple Silicon hardware, which, if we're honest, this would not be possible without Apple Silicon. Because we know the power of those devices so far, we know the power of our iPhones, the power of our Macs, the power of our iPads, our watches, all these things these days, the knowledge is there that we know this is going to be a capable product, which unfortunately for the competitors has always been the challenge. You know, in terms of low vision, I think there's huge benefits here because of those two 4K screens that are going to be inside this device. So giving huge amounts of information and ability to really get to know your world, you know, having the ability to communicate on this device. Apparently it's lightweight as well. There are, of course, some questions around being able to fit this on your head if you are someone with a disability. How will you actually do this? But ultimately, there are lots and lots of benefits here. It absolutely exceeded my expectations. And for one simple thing, and for one simple reason, cameras. I was not expecting it to have cameras, but it does. And that opens up a whole new world. Add the LiDAR scanner in there. Honestly, the potential is incredible.
Stephen, I like what you said there, because once again, it boils down to ecosystem. That although the Meta Quest headset is well-liked amongst gamers, the application in regards to where it connects elsewhere in Meta's universe hasn't been figured out. Google hasn't really done anything like this yet. Neither has Samsung. You know, they've got their ideas, but they haven't done anything practically. So again, the idea of seamlessness within the Apple universe, it's going to talk to my watch, talk to my phone, talk to my headset. It's all connected. You can really see where the ecosystem matters here, the Apple tree, if you will.
Yes, indeed. And that's the thing, right? Because we know the ecosystem and they've just built into that. So we know, and even people who might not fully understand how this would fit in their everyday life can understand how it would if they were to have one. So they've got the understanding right away. And I think they haven't gone too far. I had a commentator call it, they focused on the mundane. And I actually think that makes a lot of sense. They didn't go in there with this idea of this will be a VR headset that can change the world, and you can drive your car, or you can shoot people of an evening, you know, in a game or whatever it is. That's not what this is about. It might be able to do gaming, and you will be able to game on this, but that's not what it's for. This is for a multitude of things, and it's the mundane things we do with our phone every day. That's the experience that Apple Vision Pro can give. And that is how they will bank on you buying it, because it will change the way we use our devices. This is an iPhone moment, be in no doubt. This is the iPhone moment. Ooh. And how exciting this is to some people will depend on how geeky they are. But, you know, because for some geeks like me, it might be a case of, yeah, well, okay, we've seen this in other products. Okay, fine. But this really is a moment in the sand. And I think we're going to see some interesting products coming out following this from other companies who will be trying to compete. And that's a good thing.
Stephen, thank you for this. Have a great day.
Thanks, Dave. Always good to talk.
That is Stephen Scott, one of the hosts of Double Tap. You can find that show daily, noon Eastern time, on AMI Audio. You can find The Pulse on AMI Audio Thursdays at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. Today, Joita Gupta will chat with Jerry Berrier about birding while blind. That's The Pulse Thursdays, 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio, then on demand on your favorite podcast and platform, including YouTube. Coming up next, we'll talk a little bit about documentaries. Alex Smythe took in one about wrestling last night. So, posed the question to myself, Nazreen, and Ramya, what kind of art, or discuss the art of compelling documentaries? This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Alex Smythe, you took in a wrestling documentary last night, and it's got you thinking about compelling documentaries.
Yeah, Dave. So I love watching the series Dark Side of the Ring. It's produced by Vice. It airs on Crave. It's always so compelling. It's the storytelling, the characters that you have, the larger than life events. It always leaves me wanting more and being impatient for the next episode to air. So I wanted to find out from the round table what documentaries or docuseries are captivating all of you lately. So Nisreen, why don't we start with you on this one? What documentary or docuseries are you watching or have seen recently that just captivates you?
I go for is either the wildlife or, you know, under the sea, animal documentaries in general. I think just curiosity, the storytelling, as you said, and trying to understand the unknown is compelling enough.
Ramya, what about you? What's a documentary or docuseries that's caught your attention recently?
So the most recent film documentary I saw was Polar Bear on Disney Plus.
Oh, it's about
and
me.
I thought it was stop. I thought it was done really well. Just the way they did it, it felt like almost like an audiobook or some kind of audio experience. It was very relaxing. It was done all throughout as a story. There wasn't too much of this, you know, non-fiction talking at you perspective, and I really, really enjoyed that. I left that film thinking, wow, I felt like I've been immersed in this world along with the polar bears. And I think that that's what makes it significant.
I was making fun of y'all about reality TV shows earlier in the week when we were talking about the Hollywood writers' strike, which is potentially expanding to producers as well as actors. There is a form of documentary that potentially meshes with reality, and it's one that's been put on Netflix. It's a series of sports documentaries called Last Chance U. They've done it for football teams at community colleges as well as basketball teams at community colleges, and it's usually players coming from marginalized or difficult backgrounds and really fishbowling them, like really putting cameras and microphones everywhere in their lives, watching them struggle to either exceed and excel at the community college level or absolutely flame out. It is a hot mess, but it's very human. How much of it is scripted or not scripted, you know, you never really know with some of these things because there is no such thing as reality TV. A lot of it tends to be a little bit manufactured, but oof, man, that show can be heartbreaking and exhilarating at times. So I just like it because it seems to be about real people going through a real moment in their life. Alex, what about you?
Yeah, so I've seen the first few seasons of Last Chance U. That was a tremendous series. You know, I echo everything you said. And even extending the kind of the reality aspect that you kind of picked up on, another one that I just watched that just came out on Prime recently, Jury Duty. It kind of blends a line between documentary, docu-series, and scripted TV. For those who don't know, it's basically a mockumentary where everyone is an actor portraying real life jury duty, except for the one unsuspecting main character who has no idea anything is going on or anything is scripted. He just thinks he's involved in a documentary about a jury duty, the weirdest jury duty. It is phenomenal.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that documentary. In fact, I would call that more of a narrative trick. It falls into that family of Nathan For You or The Rehearsal, which I find to be very funny, but also tremendously brutal to real people.
Yeah, so, you know, it's definitely blurs the line because you're still following a person who's unsuspecting, who's unscripted. So there is that documentary aspect to it. But the fact that all these situations, settings, everyone else has lines, scripts, ideas, and training and rehearsals that have gone into it kind of blurs that line. So that's another like offbeat docu-series, sort of docu-series that you could check out.
Okay, got to be quick on this, everyone. If you could make a documentary, we're all in the TV world. We have the capacity. Alex, you and I have made documentaries for AMI TV. Nazreen, if you could make a documentary about anyone or anything, what would it be or who would it be? Nazreen, you're on mute, or someone has Nazreen muted. Well, Nazreen, there we go. Now we have Nazreen.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have this person that I follow on Instagram who's the Lion Whisperer, and I would love to see his work. I would love to see how he interacts with lions, so it's pretty cool.
Okay, all right. Nazreen wants to make another edition of The Tiger King. Sounds good to me, but with intellectual property that already exists. Ramya, what about you?
Please, a tamed version of the Tiger King. I would do something more on elephants. I keep learning about elephants. I know there's a ton of stuff out there already, but we're learning a lot more on their, you know, sixth sense, their intuition. There's just always something to learn about these majestic creatures, and I love animal documentaries, as Nisreen said.
You just want to go cuddle with elephants, don't you?
I do. Okay. If you can do a documentary on that, how to do that well, I would do it.
I can see right through you. 2014 Los Angeles Kings that won the Stanley Cup. I would love to make a sports documentary about them. There were a lot of compelling subplots to that Stanley Cup run that had to do with the Canadian-American hockey rivalry, the retirement of Teemu Selanne, and the growth of hockey in Scandinavia, coming back from an 0-3 deficit against the San Jose Sharks. Oh my gosh, there was so much good stuff in that playoff run, and I think on the 10-year anniversary, an organization like Sportsnet would do well to make a nice little documentary about the 2014 Los Angeles Kings. Alex Smythe, what about you?
This is a bit offbeat, but I would love to make one on the development of a pharmaceutical drug, because when any drug is developed, there are two kind of conflicting philosophies. There's the development of the drug, which is usually taking science and researchers years to put together, all within the context of trying to help people live. But once that drug is developed, then it shifts over to the marketing side of things, where you're all about trying to market this product, trying to make money, trying to recoup the cost. So I love to see kind of that interplay and that relationship between both sides of it and get an unfiltered view of the pharmaceutical company from concept to release on the market.
Merck Unfiltered with Alex Smythe. I like that one. We may have an idea for some SponCon on the show. Get that sweet pharmaceutical money in our pockets. Alex Nazreen, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Rumya, while you're giggling, you at least have to tell me what's coming up on Kelly and Rumya this afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio and AMI TV.
Pharmaceutical money is bad, except when it's in our pockets.
Exactly. Okay, so.
We're talking about the June 8th performance of Encantado, and this is for live audio description, or available with live audio description. So Montreal Community Reporter Mathieu Rochette is going to tell us more about that. Also, we're talking to Susan Techner from Fighting Blindness Canada about Walk for Sight. This is happening in Calgary this weekend. And we have our weekly roundtable with content development specialist Jim Crisco, who's joining us.
Oh, Jimmy Crisco coming into the mix. Love it. Rumya, thank you for this. Have a great day.
You too.
That is Rumya Emuthan, the co-host of Kelly and Rumya, coming your way 2 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Coming up after the break, there is a YouTuber who's created a channel to help international students avoid the struggles of being abroad. The YouTuber is Jersaheb Singh, and Don Dickinson will tell you all about him. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown, broadcasting live on AMI TV. There's a new episode of Maclean's Magazine this Friday on AMI Audio. And one of the articles is all about Canada's first sport integrity commissioner. Don Dickinson is the content curator for Maclean's Magazine. Hey, good morning, Don.
Hi there, Dave. How are you?
Don, I'm well. Starting in the world of sports, Serre-Yves Pelletier is Canada's first sport integrity commissioner. As the article describes, she is confronting the ugly underbelly of Canadian athletics. So what is Serre-Yves Pelletier's background when it comes to sports?
Well, first of all, Dave, let me say that you say her name so beautifully.
That's 25 years of living in Quebec for you.
Obviously, yeah. She's known to some, but not to everybody. She began as a decorated, very much decorated, 5-year artistic swimming athlete. And she was with the Canada's national team. After retiring in 2007, she's a Quebec City native. She earned back-to-back, oh my God, talk about an overachiever, law degrees, eventually working as in-house counsel for the Canadian and International Olympic Committees. She's now nearly a year into a new role, which of course is what we're going to talk about next.
So Dawn, in this position, there have been some really high-profile issues of misconduct in sports. I mean, one of the obvious ones is Hockey Canada and sexual misconduct. But what are some of the other issues and other kinds of issues that Serre-Yves Pelletier is going to be tackling?
Well, overall, basically, she's going to be dealing with integrity. She's going to oversee the Office of Sport as the Sports Integrity Commissioner of the OSIC, which is sort of the central hub of Canada's abuse-free sports program. They handle complaint management. If an allegation is made against an individual, that could trigger an investigation and also sanctions. If the issue is a sports organization issue, they can initiate an independent evaluation that results in recommendations and actions. And of course, that's what everybody was concerned about, that, you know, as in cases with anybody, you don't want people in the industry governing themselves and ruling on themselves. So this is going to be a much needed independent agency.
Yeah, if I started listing off the number of agencies that dropped the ball in terms of self-governance, we'd be here all day. That was one of the things that really came out of Hockey Canada, but there have also been issues with Canada Gymnastics. In fact, I think you had an article in one of your McLean's magazine episodes all about the issues at Gymnastics Canada. So, Dawn, how is the office going to make sure that these complaints aren't falling through the cracks again?
Well, very good question that everybody seems to be asking. One of the reasons that the OSIC was created was to take the management of complaints outside of the organization so they can be addressed without interference or stalling. I love that, right? Mm. Certain issues seem to repeat in organizations over time and sometimes even decades. And she's saying, and I mean, she really... When you read the article, it's quite extensive, the interview, and she seems to be saying that they're not going to be investigating forever on these issues. In other words, they're going to investigate quickly, and then they're going to come to terms, and then they're going to act. And that's basically what everybody wants, right? They don't want these things to drag on forever and ever.
Dawn, pivoting over to your second article, a couple times here in the last year, you've shared some stories about the international student experience, whether it was through The Walrus or McLean's magazine. Well, this article in particular is looking at an international student turned YouTuber, Gursahab Singh. What drew Singh to the YouTube platform?
Well, this is a first-person account talking about the fact that he had come from India, and it wasn't, this is an understatement, it wasn't the greatest experience when he landed in Canada, which was really kind of sad. We'll go into that a bit in our further. But basically, he started watching videos about immigration on social media, and after he got here, he emailed one of the particular YouTubers to ask him a question. They talked extensively. He invited me on his channel, he says, and I explained how I came to Canada as a student and landed a job in the field. The video, this is the one that he guested on, got over 40,000 views. And I, this is him referring to it, received a deluge of requests on LinkedIn and Facebook about people living in India who would like to know more about immigrating to Canada and also studying here and also getting a job here. So it was basically a guest shot on another YouTuber's channel, and it just exploded.
Dawn, you tipped your hand a little bit here by saying that Gursahab's experience was bad when he first landed. What are some of the specifics of his initial experience upon arriving in Canada?
Yeah, this was really kind of sad. You know, he sounded like he really did all his homework, and he followed through, and he researched, and he did all kinds of stuff, and he had arranged to rent a room in Thunder Bay. He was studying engineering. I mean, he's a smart kid, and he had made these arrangements through Facebook Marketplace. But after the landlord met him, he said the landlord basically said, "I'm sorry, there's no room." He was very shocked, very scared, and of course he didn't have much in the way of support in Canada. And I eventually convinced the landlord to let me sleep on the living room floor four days until I could secure new accommodations. From then on, I had trouble finding housing. Many landlords said they weren't comfortable with immigrants, and particularly immigrant students, living at their home. I persisted and eventually found a house to rent with two other international students from India. And that's how he kind of got his foot in the door. But man, it wasn't easy.
So how does he want to use the YouTube page to turn bad experiences into good experiences for other international students and immigrants?
Well, basically, he wants to use every instance of his experience in his YouTube channel to try to educate people coming over here. He says in October of 2021, I posted a video about the three intake periods in Canada for international students, January, May, and September. Few other YouTubers had offered advice on this topic, and the video went viral with 600,000 views.
Wow.
In the coming months, subscribers also asked about matters such as pathways to permanent residency, Canadian food prices, how to get get a visa, all kinds of stuff that you would, you know, I mean, it's a natural thing. You want to know how to go about your life once you've landed here in Canada. And as a student, of course, you're limited by the resources that you have. You know, a lot of these kids, basically, their families have mortgaged their lives to try to help them get a foothold in the country, right?
Yeah.
So when they get here, they have to be very, very strict about their budget, and they really need advice about how to go about everything. And his YouTube channel now has 260,000 subscribers.
Wow. Yeah, Dawn, for all the flaws that exist inside the social media sphere, these are the examples of where it's so, so valuable. Something like YouTube is an educational tool as a place for people to connect. It's a reminder that when people want to badmouth social media, there is still a lot of merit for what it means to building community and sharing information. I this is one of these wonderful stories that does show the power of a connected internet and a connected world.
Absolutely, Dave. You know, and most of it, the ones that are really, really popular are the ones that are personal experience YouTubes, right?
Yeah. Or the ones that taught me how to replace my toilet seat. That was super exciting. As a super non-handy person, it was really useful to learn how to do that. And then I felt like quite the manly man after I did it. Dawn, thank you for this. Have a lovely weekend.
Okay, you too, Dave. Bye-bye.
That's Dawn Dickinson, the content curator of Maclean's Magazine. You can find that program weekends at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI Audio. And just a mention here about Gursahab Singh's YouTube channel. I'm going to spell it out for you, but don't forget, you can find the link after the show on the blog, ami.ca/now. But let me spell this out for you just as we're saying goodbye here. G-U-R-S-A-H-I-B Singh. S-I-N-G-H. So that's the YouTube channel. Oh, Canada is how you spell it at the end too. Sorry, a little confusing here in the script how it's written. But yeah, check that out. AMI.ca/now after the show. That's all the time for the show today. Until tomorrow, I'm Dave Brown reminding you, play safe, play fair, but don't forget to have some fun. Hey, Dave Brown here. If you enjoy this podcast portion of our show, remember you can watch it live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.